And because it was so simple and the premise was just, it's not personal, I was like, that's crazy. How can that be something? And yet here I am, what, 17 years later? And I've understood in that time, A, it speaks directly to identity.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com and, of course, understandingautoimmune.com. And, oh, my goodness, we're closing in on our 400th episode. Talk, Sharon. We're not quite there yet, but we're closing in on it. And I'm so excited because I have a dear, dear friend, a longtime friend of mine, and he's agreed to be on the show, and I'm so excited. So I'm going to jump right in. I'm going to take a sip of my tea. Yes, I've got tea again. And this time it's a chai tea again. I know, I'm really on a roll with the chai tea, right? And it's got oat milk in it this time. So let me move my mic a minute so I don't... Oh yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. I need caffeine for this show. I'm so excited because I've got Joel Young on the show, and he is the creator and custodian of NPA. And now you're going like, what's that? It stands for non-personal awareness. And he's also the host of the amazing podcast, The Be a Brilliant Human Show. I'm so excited. It's great. And I align so much on this get real kind of thing. Take control of your life. And you might be wondering, what is non-personal awareness too? And that is, as I said, it's called the NPA, and it's a process that has touched lives of millions of people around the world, helping them stop taking things so personal. And I wanted Joel on the show because I wanted to talk about stop taking your diagnosis so personal. His process lets you let go of blocks and start living your dreams. And nearly 30 years experience in healing and teaching internationally, he brings a depth of wisdom and a great deal of energy and always humor to his podcast seminars and his one-on-one practice. And he also has a passion for helping coaches, healers, and change workers rise to mastery and do the magical work they're born to do and find their passion too. Now, not only that, you're going to love his accent. Welcome, Joel. Thanks for being on the show.
Sharon, fantastic. It's been, what, 2016 we last were on together?
I know.
Let's have some
fun.
Absolutely,
for sure. Oh, my goodness. So I just quickly describe the non-personal awareness program that you do and why you do that, because I've gone through the program and I love it. And it really changed a lot of the ways I operate in the world. So let's quickly just give people a taste of that.
Okay, I'll give you a quick recap. It's one of those weird moments where it came along in answer to a prayer. I often say the NPA process popped out of me. I was literally journaling in a coffee shop. And it was like, at the time I was working for a different seminar company. I was like the golden boy in the company, teaching all over the world. And the prayer came through, okay, God, grace, universe, if there's something specific wants to come through me, let me know, I'm available. And I was like, that was weird. And a week later, I was back in the same coffee shop journaling, but more around stuff that was going on. And it's six simple lines, the NPA, literally popped out of me. Because the way I journal is, it's a bit like those conversations with God. You know, Neil Donald Walsh's conversations mm-hmm. with God. I shout at God. God goes, let me tell you about it all. But on this occasion, it was like, say these words, these six simple lines, which is about not taking things personally. And it came with that kind of, this is the answer to your prayer kind of thing. And it seemed crazy because at the time I was working with a process that was you know, into sort of going into the past and doing dialoguing. It was sort of NLP, spiritual. It was like a 3-hour process to cover a thing. And this was like, I don't know, 30 seconds tops. And when I did it on the thing I was working on, which was like a core issue, it just went vroom, like snow sliding off a bonnet. It's like, or a boot. What do you call it over there? It's like, you've got different names. You call it a bonnet.
A hood.
A hood. There you go. In England, it's like, it's your bonnet. What can I say? It's like, but it just slid off. It was like the friction just went away. And I was like, that's really strange. And because it was so simple, and the premise was just, it's not personal, I was like, that's crazy. How can that be something? And yet here I am, what, 17 years later? And I've understood in that time, A, it speaks directly to identity, which we were talking about just before we came on the call. It works because every time you take something personally, it's like saying, that's me, that is. You literally identify with something. And so we get these masses of personalizations and identities that then start fighting with each other for supremacy or acting on it. And the thing about identity is it's like the master. If you think about it, the master identity, because an identity will fundamentally influence or even control, I go as far to say, your emotions, behaviors, and beliefs.
Absolutely.
Now that makes... Yes. That sound like a strange thing to some people to say. It's like, no, but if you work on your beliefs, you can work on your beliefs. Sometimes you hit an identity, I would say. But if it's under an identity that hasn't actually changed, then the identity is like any entity. It's very creative and interested in survival. It will find new ones that work just as well. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And I look at it as sort of concentric circles. And starting out on the outer circle in the behaviors area, and you have to sometimes mine backwards to get to it, but you can also start at the center and mine forwards. So,
yeah, it's kind of, it's you can go from wherever. Let's come back to, so ultimately, it's the MPA process is a very simple process that on the surface helps you stop taking things personally, which is great if you're sensitive to criticism or tend to sort of get caught up. If you live in what I call Velcro world, you know, you go to your job, in the day you come back like a giant fluff ball covering other people's stuff. You've got an issue with taking things personally and wonder why you're tired. It's great for that. But deeper than that, over the years, I've discovered that its true gift baked into it is this identity level work and a real philosophy which is based on living without an agenda. So when it comes to teaching it, as I do now for practitioners, you know, we have a thing called MPA Mastery for certified practitioners in MPA. Beyond the modality, it's like, how can, when you really embody it, you become resistance free in your being, in your energy, which is great for your clients and great for you. Because anyone who's listening to this, who's a therapist, coach or facilitator, knows that it can be an issue to get to burnout because you pick up other people's stuff.
Oh,
right?
You can become so emotionally entwined and intertangled if you're not careful. That's a critical point of burnout.
Exactly. So one of my absolute passions and one of the reasons I started teaching at a practitioner level was because I recognized that and recognized how really bathing yourself in the non-personal philosophy and the approaches beyond just the tool is incredibly powerful for really, that's why I talk about having a passion, people doing magical work, because we don't realize how much we get in our own way in the healing space. And that's true with ourselves as well as, but also as a practitioner helping other people, we can do that and without really realizing it. So that's my kind of real passion at the moment, is teaching other people to not only use the process, but to embody the underlying principles of that, because that's where the real gold of the process works. But I, you know, I give it away for free. If people want to go and get hold of it, just need to go to my website, hit the quick start button, download the sheet and just play with it. So you don't have to be a practitioner. People all over the world who have no interest in helping other, well, that sounds bad, no interest in helping other people. They really need help themselves is what I'm trying to say. Use it all the time to great effect. And there's a lot more to not taking things personally than just avoiding feeling crap with criticism.
Well, avoiding conflict. There's so many things that are important about it. And once I discovered through your process and others, just went through a period of my life after a bunch of bust ups and incredible messiness, discovering that idea. What is it? How do you walk through the world, not take things personally, and still stay loving and attached and emotionally engaged? I mean, a lot of people sometimes here don't take it personally and they disconnect, and in a way that's completely, harmful, I guess. I'm not sure the right words there, Joel. Maybe you know what I'm trying to say here. I can explain it better. It's not about disconnecting.
No, it's not. It's like, there's a few things where I think certain energies and ideas have got bad PR. It's not personal. It's like you think of movies where the gangster goes impersonal and shoots someone in the head. You know, it's like,
exactly.
It's not personal, it's business. It's like, that's the really crappy end of of it's not personal. That's usually avoidance of responsibility, which is a completely different thing. It's the personalization is that it is that kind of saying, that's me, that is. It's like, it's, you know, if someone says, Joel, you're an idiot, and I take it personally, I'm going to be saying, that's me. I'm agreeing with them and then taking it on as an identity on all sorts of energetic, subtle ways. But fundamentally, it's not personal. The quantum physics model is a fantastic kind of scientific view that supports this whole idea that fundamentally nothing is personal. The way they say it is everything exists non-locally. It's the same thing. Everything is energy. You know, I'm sure anyone who's listening to your show has heard that before. But when you think about it in terms of non-personal, I think of it like a radio wave. We understand energy is waves, and a radio wave, people who are listening to this show on FM, you know, the broadcast is coming into their receiving device. There's many of them these days, the old wireless. But it's also in the walls and the ceilings and the floor. It's all over, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're experiencing it because they have a device that tunes into it. It says, oh, I recognize that signal. I'll take a particular frequency and I will express it through the being of the radio in that case. We do that. If we tune into a vibration and we express it, we make it us. Because our bodies are like a speaker, effectively, or our, you know, whole energy, really. But it's still everywhere. And we still actually have the device. And if you like, MPA is like a way to get your hands on the dial to tune in or tune out of different frequencies. But we tend to, identification gets us stuck on, well, that's just who I am.
I know it will always be that way. Sometimes there's a big permanence in when things get into our identity, like a diagnosis. And I like to say, from the white coat authority, someone that we've been taught since childhood to venerate. And I'm not bashing doctors here. I'm just saying this is what happens internally. When someone is pronounced with a diagnosis, too often it becomes a issue of ownership. They take ownership of it. And I often tell the story, this idea of you have, and then they give the diagnosis. And when it's taken into ownership, the problem is then the body and the mind and spirit, all of that, express it as if it is their own. It is part of them. I like to say, I take when I'm hearing something like that, you have, and they say a diagnosis, I put it in the frame of like cockroaches. Okay, yeah, I can have them in the home or whatever, you know, I can have them. But that doesn't mean I want them, nor do I want to own them. That means that they need to be eradicated. And I think it's an important distinction that as we're going through the world and listening to people who, and the language they choose to use to express that to us, that we're able to sort out where we put it. I put that in, okay, that goes over with the exterminator pile. that to me is information. Like, okay, you have cockroaches. That's information. I want to exterminate those. Where the other one, make sure that it doesn't go into your identity pile.
Because if you do that, you can end up with pet cockroaches.
And ones that you admire and really take care of and really help flourish.
Yeah, and all the things that come, if you think, because this is the piece, really, is like the subtlety of how the power of language or thinking behind how we experience our stuff. So pet cockroaches instantly changes it from to under the word pet is a whole different set of instructions of how to respond than, you know, pest cockroaches. It's those subtle things that make all the difference. And it's true. Let's go back to identity, Sharon, because I want your listener to really get this, the power and the impact of identifying with any condition. Diagnosis is a good example. But I'm going to use the example of two potential identities, good girl and bad girl, right?
Mm-hmm. I already think conjured up all sorts of metaphors and stories in my mind, yeah. Just those four words.
Yeah, good girl and bad girl. So if you identify as the good girl, then the behaviors that you express, the beliefs you think, and the emotions that you feel around things will be subject to that identity. You will begin to limit other things, judge other things, judge the bad girl. I'm saying it in a very polarized way. Often we're more complex as humans, but to illustrate the point, think of it in a very polarized way, good girl and bad girl. So the good girl has a whole series of limitations, things that are wonderful, and ways that she thinks, believes, and behaves that go with that identity. And conversely, the bad girl, perhaps quite different set of ideals, beliefs, feelings about the world that she interacts with. Now, if you shift from good girl to bad girl, your identity, then you really step into that bad girl identity without you having to go through massive belief change processes or deal with emotional stuff underneath it or to try to actively shift your behavior. If you fully step into bad girl, then those things are going to change by themselves automatically, because now I'm the bad girl and you'll respond accordingly. That's the mechanism of identity and how powerful it is. Let's take it back to diagnosis. My cancer. I am the person who has cancer. This is who I am. I am now the person with cancer. That invokes, and this works on an energetic level as well, that really says it now invites the thoughts which affect the feelings and then elicit certain behaviors that support that. And in our culture, but cancer is just an example, but most conditions have a set of societal rules that you will then quickly pick up, like, not literally, but although people do, Googling it. This is how you therefore respond when you are that person. When you are the person with cancer, there is a track that most of society will tell you is the way it goes, and you put yourself in that energy because that's who I am now. Whereas if, as you're suggesting, which I love, you go, hey, there's cancer energy and I seem to be tuning into it for a period of time, or at least it's not me, it's just a thing.
Yeah, that's where I go. It's not me, it's just a thing that, and then doing my own personal sorting in there inside, because I think what happens is too often, as the idea of good girl, bad girl, or a diagnosis, you have already heard all the metaphors and the stories, everybody else's descriptions of what happened to them. And unconsciously, those are so easily adopted, like, oh, well, that's going to be me now. That's my story now, too. And even the idea of good girl, bad girl, the idea of, okay, as you said those words, and I told you immediately afterwards, I already have metaphors to go with those.
Yeah, you do.
That's how fast it happens.
There are entire databases in the collective unconscious that are activated when you go to these places for your well-being or for harm. And often it's a mixed bag, but generally you can look and say someone who identifies with a very, you know, challenging diagnosis will invoke things that they're not even aware of. It's a bit like the institution of marriage. This may sound a bit like a weird, I don't know where I'm going to this segue, but when you go into the institution of marriage, you are engaging in an energy system that is the institution of marriage. And if you're unconscious about it, or you identify with that institution, you're not going to need to be wary of all the various fairly rubbish stuff that we've put in there over the years.
Oh, absolutely. It's so funny when you say that, because I think of people I know that said, well, he was great as a boyfriend, but now he thinks he's a husband and he's changed all of a sudden. You know, we got married and he changed.
Perfect.
Now, I think they both changed. It was like, well, what were your internal things of what is a husband too? So, I mean, we can't spend all day on that, but I've heard that from numerous friends who say that.
And again, I don't say it to make people scared of marriage. It's like, it's that mindfulness piece of going, okay, if we're going to go into this marriage, there are really powerful, wonderful, delicious reasons we're doing that. Let's go in with that consciousness and then be mindful if we slip into the greater consciousness of marriage, go, we're just doing that marriage thing that we've got handed down. We can laugh at that and go, no, that's not who we are in this marriage. You know, yes, we're married, but this is what that means to us. That conscious act and the identification with it is such a powerful thing, which is why, you know, with MPA, it's a great way just to get in touch with what is the identification and how can I let it go if it sucks. And also there's ones that we exclude ourselves from, which are really nice ones, the yummy stuff. You can use the same process to include yourself in that vibration in a positive way. So it's powerful for that.
Oh, fantastic. Let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Joel, because I just, as you can see, we ran down rabbit holes. That's one thing I love about him, among so many things. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com and, of course, UnderstandingAutoimmune.com, where you can listen to all the past episodes. We're closing in on 400 episodes, as I said at the opening, and so there's plenty of juicy stuff there, including Joel's in my interview from 2016. And of course, after all these years, I was like, Joel, you have to come back. You have to come back. And thank you so much. I've so enjoyed this exploration of identity, Joel, and the ideas of how we can take things on and not be aware of them, and how to make sure that we walk through the world aware. Now, the reason I reached out to you again, I know it'd been too long as well, but I watched a video of yours where you introduced the concept of the harmony equation, and it was all about conflict and how identity played into conflict. And in my other work, my other life, as the audience knows, this is my passion project. I work a lot with people in difficult conversations, also often called the difficult people whisperer. So I was like, yes, yes. I wanted to talk about it because I found in my healing process from my diagnosis that there was a lot of past stuck conflict, a lot of stuck trauma and things like that. And once I learned to not take those personal, work through those, healing accelerated. So I was just all on board about your harmony equation. And let's talk about your work on around the idea of what do we do with conflict?
Well, I think firstly, it bears saying or just underlining what you just said, which is I'm not sure people realize how much conflict is at the heart of stuckness. There's three kinds of conflict that we can experience. Inner conflict is the most obvious one, and that's often where we'll meet the stuckness. There's conflict we have with other people, so like with your spouse or you know, your kids or your boss or even the government is an external thing, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of that lately.
yeah, on both sides of the pond.
On both sides of the pond, yeah. And then there's external conflict, which can still affect us. So I think that's the one that is least talked about or understood, is where it's more prevalent in some personality types than others. But when two people that you love are in conflict, for some people that can literally rip them apart inside because they're taking it very personally. That's what's happening. I had this when I was younger. I was very conflict averse. Naturally, I was inclined to, I just couldn't handle conflict in any way, shape or form. But I remember this experience of, I was in early 20s and I was out for a walk with my fiance at the time and a friend of mine, both of whom I loved dearly. Now, they were both very fine with conflict. And so, of course, they had a row because she wanted to go faster and he wanted to go slower. So they have this kind of, we say Barney in the UK, this Barney, and I'm in the middle going, and then, so she walks off because she wants to go faster. She's fine with that. He slows down because he's fine with that. What do I do? I'm someone who has this situation where when other people are in conflict, I take it so personally. I literally walked in the measurable middle between the two of them. And they were fine doing that thing, but I was like torn apart. This literally, for me, it was like a physical, like almost one of them had a hook in my back and one had a hook in my front and they were both pulling on me. Again, they were fine. But this phenomenon I've realized is quite a thing. And although for some people it's less of a thing, we can all relate to it when we think about our parents being in conflict, because as kids, we tend to be more open and affected by the environment we're in. So the whole thing with conflict is that it's more prevalent than we realize. There's different kinds of it. But what it can do over time is end up, if you've got unresolved conflict, you're jammed up in some way. And if you don't even realize it's conflict or that you have an issue with that conflict, you can run yourself around in circles trying to look at this issue or that issue. But until that conflict's resolved, you can't really get the cogs moving again. So what we do with the harmony equation is an extension of MPA, right? It's born out of the non-personal awareness. And it's a very simple equation of working out what are the ideal conditions of the parts that are in conflict. And if they bloody well got on and did that, what would happen? Now, on a practical level, that obviously you get people who do conflict resolution in the real world and facilitate something along those lines. But what's great about what we do in the harmony equation is we give people a really simple syntax to elicit all the pieces that you need for that, such that that resolution energy pops out like at the bottom of a vending machine. And it's so simple. And it's this year I started doing that event. I do it a few times a year to help people to A, understand conflict more, but B, have a really powerful tool. I use this tool with nearly every client because you'll find that that stuckness is usually there's some conflict at the core of it. And it's so simple to identify the parts, what needs to take place, allow it to open energetically, and then boom, you get this kind of the resolution of the harmony equation is like, that's the thing, that's the medicine, and you can go and use that.
What I find fascinating is, well, the more I understand it, the more I use it, the quicker I'm able to go through the process, the quicker I'm able to identify it, the quicker I'm able to move through it. And I find that when you were talking about the metaphor of the vending machine, I thought to myself, that's when I get to this place where I've noticed when I say this word, it's like, I'm done. And there's a certain form of when I say I'm done that everybody knows around me that that's it. I'm not going there anymore. I'm done. I am not going to do X, Y, Z, or I'm not going to be involved in that conflict or, you know, whatever. I'm done. I love that metaphor of the vending machine because that's exactly what happens. It's like, boom, I'm done. That's it. It's over. And I find that so relieving. It's like taking a nice deep breath and everything just settles into place when you can get to that point of being, I'm done.
That's what I see time and time and again, is because the harmony equation, which is a little syntax process, that's what I see more than ever, is that relief, that like, oh, just it's like taking the dials and going click, 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 and then click, and everything goes, oh, you know, it's so simple to do. And what came up for me when you said that is, everyone knows when you say I'm done that you mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really fascinating, but it's like we're slightly going a bit of a tangent, but you know, we love to do that.
Of course.
But you can't fake that.
No.
It's like, no. But so much of what I see in the world, especially people can get caught up in the idea of they're supposed to be positive, for example. But you can tell the difference when someone's supposed to be positive and acting as if, rather than someone who's underneath the surface, there's a true congruence that's going on. And the reason you don't get true congruence in anything is there's conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're doing the positivity because you're supposed to, there's a part of you that really wants to go there and a part of you that really doesn't. And until you resolve that conflict and get those two parts pulling together, there's always going to be this energetic mismatch and it's not going to really land in you. And people know the difference. And you, even though we're amazingly good at self-denial,
really,
you really know the difference, you know, and the results, the effect it has is different. That makes sense?
Absolutely. And I think the older I get, the more I take time to think to myself about, I know I'm doing that false positivity at times, and I really encourage myself to slow down. Okay, what else is happening here? Why are you forcing the positivity instead of letting it flow? And it's about, sometimes I feel like all sorts of other things pop into my head, like fairness or how dare they, or all these little things that need to be resolved with me that usually come from childhood. The idea of fairness to me, I have a small grandson who's just of that age, preschool age, where fairness is a big thing. It is a major thing to him. And I noticed that there are times, even in my senior years here, that little five-year-old pops up with things like that. But taking the time to listen to those parts of me and go, it's okay, you know, asking the question, does it really have to be fair right now? What is it that is triggering that part of you? I think it's important to have those inner dialogues and take some time with yourself.
I agree. I think those inner dialogues are really, really powerful and important. But what you're expressing there, if I hear you say that, I think that takes some humility.
Well, like as you get a senior, humility sort of comes along.
Well, yeah,
with the package.
Maybe we just earned it with age, Sharon. I don't know, but it's worth saying. I mean, it's one of the core things that I do get on my soapbox about. But you have to be humble enough to accept your flaws, to accept your imperfection, to accept ultimately your humanity. I mean, that's why I named my podcast Be a Brilliant Human, because it's the humanity of it. Everything I do on that show is to help people remember they're human and stumble forward gracefully, because that's all we can do. Those dialogues that you're talking about need a first step, which is, I'm faking on myself.
Exactly. And then knowing that even if I'm faking myself, and maybe it's a good act, but people still energetically react and understand that there's a dissonance, that they may, like, I don't know what it is. They might not be able to label it, but internally they too are going, something's not quite right.
That's true. I mean, I think we mentioned mastery. See, this is where we had a conversation before. We talked about before on the show. Anyway, there's the mastery program in MPA, which is working with practitioners to help them really become the best facilitators they can possibly be. And I say this to them all the time. You know, we're talking about having no agenda. They might not ever say it to you, clients, but they can smell an agenda, and it puts grit into the cogs of the healing process. So you can't do I've got no agenda. You have to be agendaless. Like, you literally have to. And within that, I also say to them, and you're human. So sometimes it's okay, because you'll spot it and go, darn. So either fess up to your client. That's what I would do.
Exactly.
Damn, I just caught myself on agenda. Hang on, let me drop that. Let's go back. Let's say that again. Or, you know, or just move forward, forgive yourself in the moment, and just let it go. But the sooner you can do, just acknowledge it, those little ripples that we put in because we're human, and just go, let go again. But those subtle energetic things, I think it's where it's at on the planet right now. We're not settling for these, I don't know, these, I can't think of a word for them. The stuff that gets blown up like just clouds of rubbish. We're not settling for that. We want more acuity to the subtleties of life. We're picking up more on things like we've been talking about, false positivity or an image that's sort of presented by, I don't know, a president or something. and a lot of people are like going, I'm starting to see through that. What's real underneath it? It's not that we want you all to be perfect or want ourselves to be perfect, but be real.
Be real and be willing to fess up to yourself. Recently, I was reading an article and I had never been able to put words to it. And sometimes when I read about things, I'm like, okay, those are the words. Those are the words I've been mulling around. What are the words to it? And one of my agendas for a really long time that in hindsight, I'm like, wow, that's a big agenda, was just the need for closure. I really don't like conflict either. It's odd that you and I choose to discuss that in the world as a way of being, but I'm not one of those that jumps in full force, like let's go for it, you know, down and dirty. And I noticed that sort of the ending of that, the part of that, was this idea of the need for closure, whether it was the final word when I fired my doctor, you know, a doctor that I didn't feel was on the same path that I was at understanding how best for me. I'm sure they're a fine doctor, but for me, I was on the right path that I needed to travel for my own well-being. It's been so interesting for me that one of my agendas that pops up all by itself, and then I have to stop and go, okay, awareness moment, that's an agenda, is this need for closure. And sometimes confronting other people in that need for closure, and I find that so fascinating about myself, was when I watched your video about the harmony equation, you had these three ugly steps, or what would they be? With these three ugly things called resentment, injustice, and envy. And I was like, wow. But to me, I really was going, how that plays into my need for closure. I was like, wow. So anyway, I went really deep in that video, Joel, as you can tell.
those were the impacts of conflict. When there was a study done, and they looked at what, you know, what was the impact of conflict on, you know, at a personal level, and they found there was resentment was the first one. And I was relating in that video. People can watch that video if they go to the Harmony Equation, which is the mpaacademy.com/harmony will get them there. But frustration, resentment will show up as the frustration. So you'll meet, I was saying, you'll meet this in clients or in people you know, the symptoms of frustration or blocked energy. So if it comes, like if the conflict has the impact of resentment, it's going to show up in that way. The other is a sense of injustice. This is like a response to conflict. So you don't think of it as conflict, you just get this injustice. So that's the source of all the victimhood. And that there's, you know, if you want to be disempowered and hurt yourself, become a victim.
Yeah. When I hear the word injustice, and not me saying it, but well, a little bit, but like when you just said it, this inner 2-year-old stomps their foot. It's just like, yes. Still identifies with that word.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a symptom of some kind of conflict that wants to be resolved, but it becomes this identity of the victim. And the third one you mentioned there was envy. And that's all of that low self-worth stuff that you meet in life. It comes from a response to conflict, which is envy. Normally some kind of comparison is going on there. And again, but if you think about all of those, they are such a huge part of the human experience and the not so nice end of it. But all of it comes back to that's an impact of some kind of conflict, inner conflict usually. And then when you come and do something like the harmony equation, you go, oh, well, I can deal with that in 15 minutes. Yep. Easy.
And the thing the correlation for the autoimmune hour, I want people to understand that these inner conflicts cause physical things in your body, whether it's a tightness, a stuckness, an inflammation. These things then can, you know, rage like a wildfire if we're not careful about stopping them before they have, you know, before they continue rage out of control. And that's the part where I love your work and other people we've had on the show that talk about trauma and holding these things, inner conflict or external conflict, holding that too closely to ourselves as well. And right now, what I'm seeing here in the States, if I can kind of correlate throughout the news of worldwide, it's probably there as well, is undefinable conflict. I'm feeling it, but it's from outer sources. It seems like there's so much conflict all of a sudden and traveling a whole lot of places that we've never been. The majority of us were not alive in 1918 for the worldwide pandemic flu, Spanish flu. And then all of a sudden, there's just been so many rapid fire changes, as well as people say, well, Sharon, there's always been rapid fire changes. Yes, but now we have the technology to know about them instantaneously.
Yeah, that is a difference. I think that is, again, I think every generation has its perspective and deals with its challenges, same as every human has their perspective and deals with challenges. But I think right now, that is the biggest challenge, is that we're so aware of so much, which is why I say that I think we're interested in the subtleties and the nuances. Of course, much of the expression out there in the world is the exact opposite. I'm not interested in having a real conversation because I'm in a polarized argument with you and I'm identifying with one side. Therefore, you're full of crap and I'm right.
Right. And some harm has to happen to you over there.
And that's what you see on the surface. But this is my perspective, is that pushing up that underneath that is this human longing to come into that higher level of discernment, that acknowledgement of the differences and the subtleties. And this is just the process that we're going through. And hopefully in my own little way, I can offer something into that discussion and be an answer to the prayer that I think is coming in that direction for us.
And you so are. I so enjoyed all of our conversations and everything. We're down to just the last few minutes, Joel, when Joel and I get together, time flies. But I want everyone to know, just share some final thoughts that you have with us, and then how people can find the different things that we've talked about today, like your non-personal awareness program, as well as the harmony equation.
Sure. Well, the easiest way to go and find all of that is to go to www.thenpa, that's November Papa Alpha, mpacademy.com. And there'll be stuff on there. There's a quick start button is the best way. If you've not come across MPA before, please go hit that quick start. Give me your email and I'll send you the sheet with the words. And that's the best. So you can have a go, see if it fits with you, those kind of things. And also on that page, you'll see information about mastery. If you're a practitioner, want to come explore that and the harmony equation, it's all on that page. But more than anything else, especially if you haven't encountered MPA, hit that quick start button and just get the sheet. I'll send it to you. And have that. I think beyond that, I've loved this discussion today. And maybe the thing that sticks with me that I would love people to take away from our conversation is just to become very mindful of what they're identifying with and understand that identifying with something is like subscribing to that channel. And some of the channels that we subscribe to will send you stuff that you really don't want to be watching moment to moment to moment. So that would be my invitation, is to notice who you say you are and contemplate the notion that there might be a much nicer thing if it's hurting that you could identify with. And then of course go get the sheet, because that will help you shift from one to the other.
And understanding that identities are very subtle. And I like to sometimes, and when I bump into an agenda of an identity, that's usually where I find it first is, okay, why am I doing this agenda? And then it sort of backtracks me to the identity part. Sometimes I'm a little slow in that, getting to that, where that identity part is. But for me, as you said, be mindful and slow things down. Sometimes slowing it down so I can say, that's interesting. What's the purpose of that? Where did that come from? Has also been helpful in exploring those different things where I'm finding, and also recognizing what no longer serves you. Sometimes I work with people who will say something that's a very strong belief and it's gone into their identity, and taking a moment to recognize, asking the question, does this still serve me? We all choose these agendas and identities at some point in life because they served us. When we're 2 years old and discovering fairness, it serves us to stomp our foot and say, me. Does it serve you when you're 60? I think that's the question that I encourage people to ask, is what no longer serves me in my highest and greatest good and my well-being. And once, not that I'm totally there, but as I've adopted this mindset, I find that my autoimmune condition is dissipating. And as the doctor likes to say, remission, I'm like, whatever, your words, I'm doing great. So it's just words at this point.
Yeah, that is a great question. What no longer serves me? And I think in that, it's like one thing, if you decide to come and spend time with MPA, it helps you with that process of discerning, because identities aren't, we use the example of good girl, bad girl, because they're obvious. A lot of the times they're not that obvious. So it's a great way to look at that and help you in that process of finding what's the identity that no longer serves me.
Thank you, my friend. I so adore spending time with you.
It's been fun. We've traveled places.
Yeah, it's been too long. It's been too long since I've been over to the UK to visit you even. Oh my goodness. Well, everyone, this is my dear friend Joel Young, and he's the creator and custodian of NPA. As you've heard, it's the Non-Personal Awareness Program. He's also the host of the Be a Brilliant Human podcast. So be sure and check that out too, because it's awesome, as you could tell with Joel as the moderator of that. You can find more about everything we've talked about and get that wonderful NPA process sheet over at the npaacademy.com. And I'll have that up on the show description over at understandingautoimmune.com. So join us next week for another brand new episode. Drop me notes about how you've been able to implement what you've learned from Joel, please. I love getting those notes about the different things that you learn and how we can adapt, because once we share how this is working, just the more collective energy we get around it, the more I just learn new stuff. So everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me next week. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites, and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.